We're in a stewardship series this month, and if you remember 2 weeks ago, Dan Winkler led a powerful lesson on giving and how giving matters to Jesus, that Jesus watches our giving and that Jesus cares what we give. Today, I want to take a little bit higher view, go up or take a broader view of stewardship. Giving is important, but it's one aspect of our stewardship. And here's one of the reasons why I want to take a broader view of stewardship. I've worked in the financial world as a financial planner in financial education with working with Ramsey Solutions for about 20 years. You know what I've found? I've actually found that most people actually want to be generous, particularly people who are followers of Jesus. Most people want to give, and they want to give generously. But a lot of people don't give generously, and the reason is most people don't know how. You see, at the end of the month, there's not a lot left over for God. Here's one of the reasons why. The statistics we see is that 76% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, regardless of income and regardless of age. So that means when they get to the end of the month and they think about what they have left over to give to God, there's not a lot left. And so I want to take a broader view, as I mentioned, of stewardship, because I've got good news for you. If you're in that position, if you would like to be able to give more to God, but you don't feel like you can, there's good news. The Bible is a guide for us. God has a lot to say for us, to us, about how we live our life. And that includes money. V.P. Black is someone that preached a lot about generosity and stewardship in the past, and I've read a lot of his material. One of the things that he said, and others have said this too, that there's over 1,300 scriptures on money and possessions. Did you know that? 1,300. So God has a lot to say about money and about stewardship and about how we handle our possessions. Jesus has a lot to say about money, possessions, and stewardship. And by the way, as one of your shepherds here, I'm not here preaching this message because of something we want from you. It's what I want for you of how to live according to the biblical principles, biblical financial principles, so that you can live a life of generosity. Because you see, God doesn't need our money. When we're generous, it's for our benefit. It's for us to live like God, because God is a giver. So there's over 1,300 scriptures on money. Because of time today, we're only going to have time to look at half of them. So we're going to look at some of the biblical financial principles today. God's wisdom to help us to live a better life. Really, that's what the Bible is about. And it's about salvation, but it's also about helping us live more like Him, more like Jesus. And I want to tell you, this is just a very high-level overview of some of the things that we dig deeper into in things like the Financial Peace class that we're doing on Sunday night. But I want you to be able to see just some things that we learn and what God has to say about this in His Word. The first thing is that God owns it all. That's the first principle of stewardship. God owns it all. And we are managers. Listen to this passage, 1 Corinthians 10:26. For the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And by the way, this is a quote directly from Psalm 24:1 as well. And listen to this. Psalm 50, God says, for the beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. You see, God owns everything. He owns the land that we walk on. He owns the homes that we're in. He owns the money that we have and the possessions that I have. I am a manager of those things to God. Look at this definition of stewardship, because that's a word that we don't use a lot outside of the church realm today, but it was a very common word back during the times of the Bible, or even back just 50, 100 years ago. The definition of that is the careful and responsible management of something entrusted in one's care. In other words, you could hire me to manage something that you had, whether it was your cattle, your farm. You hire a bank sometimes to manage your money. You might hire a financial advisor to help you manage your investments. God entrusts us with blessings to manage, and they're His. And He allows us to manage those. Let me give you a little more practical example. Have any of you ever seen that show, Downton Abbey? Do you know who the steward is in that example? There's a few of them, but the primary steward is the guy over on your right, my left, in that far corner. He was the steward over the manor, over the Downton Abbey. And so he was hired to manage that for the family. So imagine that God is the owner and we are the manager for Him. Let me ask you a question. If you imagine yourself in that position, managing your blessings, your money, and in fact, everything in your life for God, but we're focusing on money and possessions today, how good of a manager are you? Are you doing a good job for the Master? Are you doing a good job for God? Can you say that if you hired you, that you're doing a good job managing God's blessings? Another way to ask it, if you were God, would you fire you? Now, this morning is not about judgment, and I don't want you to necessarily feel bad if you're not a good manager. This is a message of hope, that there's principles in the Bible to help us be better managers of God's things, and we're going to look at some of those principles in just a few minutes. But did you know if you've made a mistake with money, that makes you over 12? We all have, right? None of us have always managed well, and all of us make mistakes. All of us can do better. So my point's not to bring down judgment on us this morning, but it is for us to think about it seriously, because we represent God, and we manage what we have, the blessings that we have, for God. And stewardship is a serious issue. Second principle is money is dangerous. Notice I didn't say that money is evil. I said money is dangerous. Let's look at a few passages very quickly. Some things the Bible says. Mark 4:19 says money is deceitful. Matthew 6:24, Jesus says money can be a master. You can only serve one master, and you must decide who is going to be your master. Proverbs 23:5 says money can fly away. And 1 Timothy 6:10 says that money, the love of money, is the root of all evil. Notice that he didn't say that money is the root of all evil. He said the love of money is the root of all evil. Look at this passage. I want to look at this one just a little bit more in depth. Matthew 6:20, 21. Jesus says, "Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." See, Jesus knows that our heart follows our money. It's not that you place your heart outside of money and then your money will follow. Notice what it says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So where you put importance with your money is where your heart will naturally follow. God knows that money can be a stronghold in our life, that money can be a tremendous temptation. Money is dangerous. Money can be used for evil. Money can take over our life if we're not careful. It can become a master. But notice also that money can be used for good as well. Money itself is not good or evil. It's a tool that can be used to lay up treasure in heaven, or it can become our master. So we have a choice whether we are going to use money for good or whether we're going to use money for evil. We have a choice whether we're going to let money rule us or whether we're going to manage money for God, who owns it all. Whether money is going to be our master or our tool. So now we're going to get into some more practical principles. Those first two were more like foundational principles of stewardship. This first one is get on a budget. The Bible actually tells us to have a plan. Proverbs 27, 23, and 24 says, "Know the condition of your flocks and give attention to your herds." So this passage tells us to be responsible and diligent. You see, back in those days, for a shepherd, their flocks and their herds, were actually their possessions. It would be like for us today, like our bank account. Or if you own a farm today or you own livestock, this applies to you as well because that's part of your possessions that you have. It tells us to be responsible and be diligent, and that includes our money. Jesus said in Luke 14, "For which of you desiring to build a tower does not sit down first sit down and count the cost." Now, Jesus is talking about spiritual things in this case, but the principle of planning applies to every area of our life, doesn't it? It applies to our money and our possessions, just like it applies to our soul. And here's a passage that a lot of us are very familiar with. 1 Corinthians 16, talking about giving, it says, "On the first day of every week, each of you is to put something aside and store it up as he may prosper." Here's something I want to point out in this that you might not have noticed before. Did you know that to be able to give as you've been prospered requires actually, to truly give as you've been prospered requires that you know what's going on with your money? In other words, you have to budget to be able to give as you've been prospered. If you don't budget, you don't necessarily know where your money is going, so it's hard to know how to give as you've prospered. As someone said, it doesn't matter how much you make, it's what you do with it that matters, right? And to be able to know what you're doing with your money, you have to know where it's going. And so there's a process that we actually teach in Financial Peace University called a zero-based budget. And the principle there is to give every dollar a name before the month begins so that you know where the money is going. And that's planning more from the windshield of a car rather than just looking through the rearview mirror of what happened with my money at the end of the month. Next principle is get on the same page with money. And I'm speaking particularly to marriages here, to couples. Did you know that statistics say that money and money fights are the number one cause of divorce in America today? You see, money can get between us and our spouse. And one of the reasons for the money fights being such an issue is because so many people, the majority of people, don't budget, and those people also don't look at the budget together with their spouse. Look at these passages. Jesus said, "And the two shall become one." We know that's true in marriage, that when we become married, we become one. We're no longer two separate people. We're one in a family together. But that's also true with our money. We have to be on the same page with what we're doing with our money. In a godly marriage, there's not two separate bank accounts. We're one, and we do this together. So money needs to be budgeted together. But you know, there's something else that's interesting in money and marriage is that opposites typically attract. Typically, there's words we use for it in the class, there's typically a nerd and there's a free spirit in a marriage. Both are important, by the way. The nerd typically is a little more bent toward planning, organization. They're typically just like naturally more organized. The free spirit makes sure that the nerd has a life. Right? The free spirit makes sure that we actually get out of the house and have fun with our family. Both are important. But you see, when there's a nerd and a free spirit, when there's opposites, that can naturally cause issues when we're dealing with a topic like money. And so there's a process that we go through called the budget meeting, and we're not going to go through that today. You're welcome to come and learn about that in the class. But there's some rules, some tips that we have that can help those two opposites be able to communicate with each other. And you can see just a couple of the examples on the screen. One is, it's not a weekend summit. You have 17 minutes to talk about the budget. The free spirit, you have to come to the meeting. Just a couple of examples like that. And again, the key here today is just the high-level principle. The Bible teaches that we are one and to get on the same page with money. Next principle is get out of debt. Probably no surprise for you to hear me say that if I work with Dave Ramsey. Proverbs 22:7 says, "The borrower is the slave of the lender. Not just it's not a good idea, the borrower is the slave of the lender. One thing that I've found, and you can test me in this, you can go home and look, there's never a positive mention of debt anywhere in the Bible. You can't find anything good about debt in the Bible. In fact, the only words that you hear are words like slave or a curse or you're foolish if you co-sign for another, just as an example. So if you search through the scriptures, it's not there. In fact, here's a passage that you might not have thought of in this way, but even Romans 13:8 says, "Owe no one anything except to love each other." We don't have time today to look at all the passages, but there's lots of passages that talk about debt. Here's one of the reasons I believe that God never mentions it positively. Look at this statistic, and this is just one. I could go through car payments, I could go through mortgages, all kinds of things. The average credit card debt in America today is $27,000. That's crazy, isn't it? I believe that consumer debt, and especially things like credit card debt, is a warning sign of discontentment and materialism. Now, I'm not saying that debt is a sin. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, according to the Bible, debt is not wise. Look at some of these passages. Proverbs 28:20 says, "He who hastens to be rich will not go unpunished." Isn't that kind of what a credit card is? A way to hasten to be rich, to get something that you really can't afford. So you use a credit card to get it. And really, if you look at debt in itself, especially consumer debt, debt is a way for us to get something that we can't afford. Again, I'm not here to bring judgment. I'm here to kind of bring a wake-up call of what the Bible has to say about living. You see, today, it's more common for people to live in a microwave society than what it used to be, where people took more of an approach like a crock pot. Today's society, the way people handle money today is more like trying to cook all their food in a microwave instead of using a crock pot, using a slower approach, waiting to buy things until we can afford it, handling our money according to the biblical principles. You know what? Food cooked in a crock pot tastes better. It takes a little longer, but it tastes better, and it's better for you. It's the same thing with God's ways of handling money as well. So let me ask you, kind of as a litmus test for yourself, how much less stress would you feel and would you have right now if you had zero payments? If you didn't owe anybody anything financially, how would you feel? It'd feel pretty good, wouldn't it? And again, this is not about necessarily being rich. This is about having less stress. Let me ask you this. How much more generous could you be toward God and others if you had zero payments? If you were completely debt-free? If I had zero payments, I could be more generous, couldn't you? And, you know, I'm speaking of, we're at a place where the only thing we have left now is a mortgage. And I can tell you, I'm able to be more generous now than I used to could be. And I'm looking forward to paying that house off, because then I can be even more generous. And so no matter where you are, if you have a lot of consumer debt or if you just have a little, I want you to realize the faster that you can get out of debt, the less stress you'll have and the more generous you'll be able to be and the more you'll be able to take care of your family and your retirement and other things. You see, debt robs our peace and it robs our ability to be generous. So there's a process that we teach called the debt snowball, just simply paying off your debt smallest to largest. That helps you build momentum and pay that debt off faster. Again, those are things that we teach in the class. Next principle is save and invest. Proverbs 21:5 says, "The plans of the diligent lead surely to abundance, but everyone who is hasty comes only to poverty." And look at this passage later in 21 as well. "Precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. Did you know that oil back in that day was a medium of currency? It was kind of like our money today. So this says, in a wise man's house is precious treasure and money. In other words, it's like savings today. Here's another statistic. 66% of Americans today can't cover a $1,000 emergency from savings or without going into debt. And so I would recommend to you, and we teach, to have 3 to 6 months of expenses set aside in like a liquid savings account or money market account, because emergencies will happen. We don't know when it'll happen. We don't know how much it'll be. But if the Bible actually teaches us to have some savings. It teaches us to have some oil and treasure set aside to be able to cover things. But it's not only for emergencies. We know that we're to save for things like large purchases that we might have, maybe improvements to our house. If we have a roof, we know we have to replace it, right, in 20 to 30 years. We need to plan for it. We know retirement is coming. We need to save for things like retirement. If we have kids, we need to save for them to go to college and to take care of them as well. And so it's biblical to save. The last principle is to give generously. You know what I found? I found that handling God's money according to His biblical principles leads to margin. And when we have margin, that also leads to contentment. The contentment and margin, they build on each other. And contentment leads to generosity. Look at these passages. 1 Timothy 6, godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of the world. And then later he says, be rich in good works. In 1 Timothy 6, be rich in good works, generous and ready to share. And then 2 Corinthians 9, 7 says, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. You see, attitude matters in our giving. God doesn't want us to give to Him if we're doing it reluctantly. He would rather we didn't give. He wants us to give cheerfully. Giving is an act of worship. And just as our attitude matters in worship, our attitude matters in our giving. And I found that as we live according to the biblical principles, we can give generously. We can give more cheerfully. We can enjoy it because we have more margin to be able to do that. Notice what else it says in that passage, to decide in your heart. A lot of times, and I'll be honest, I was never really taught this growing up, and I didn't hear a lot of teaching around giving in the church that I grew up at. But as I've studied this more and learned about it, decide in your heart actually means decide on a percentage that you will give. That's what as you've been prospered means, is to give a percentage of how God has blessed you. We're to decide in our hearts how much we give. That also means we decide, just like I mentioned, you have to budget to be able to give as you're prospered. That means we decide how much we're going to give at the beginning of the month or whenever you're paid. If you're paid in the middle of the month, you decide then what you're going to give for that month. It's not when you show up to church that I decide whatever I have left in my wallet is how much I'm going to give. Or I'm not called to be a tipper to God. I'm called to be a giver as He's prospered me. Notice this passage in 2 Corinthians 8. Paul teaches, but as you excel in everything, see that you excel in this act of grace also. You see, grace is a gift. Giving is a spiritual gift to be learned. Did you know that giving is actually one of the spiritual gifts listed in Romans chapter 12? Romans 12, verse 8, when it lists out those spiritual gifts, it lists generosity, and giving is one of those gifts. It's a gift for us to learn. I want to share something else with you. Giving is the most fun you'll ever have with money. And that includes giving to the church. That includes the giving to others that we see that are in need. It's a great feeling to be able to have some extra money to be able to give to someone when I see them in need. And you can enjoy giving more when you're following the biblical principles. So as I mentioned, these are principles that we're learning how to do in classes like Financial Peace University. And it's not too late for you to join that class. We're just in the second week tonight of the class that we started this month. And so I want to encourage you, if you want to learn more about those principles and how to apply them, I want to invite you to come to that class. You're welcome to come in and be part of that to learn. But there's another reason why stewardship, I believe, is so important and that the Bible teaches. Look at this passage in Luke 16. If then you have not been faithful in the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust to you the true riches? You know what that passage is saying? It's saying that if God can't trust us with our money, how we handle the possessions that He's blessed us with as managers for Him, how can He trust us with the more important things, spiritual things? In other words, if we can't manage His money well, we can't be trusted with the things that are even more important to Him. Stewardship is a responsibility. And then look at this passage, Mark 8:36. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? You see, money can come between us and God if we're not careful. Money can become an idol in our life. It can become a master of our life. It can cause us to not think as much about God if we're too stressed around money, if we're not following the right processes and principles with money. It can cause us to not feel like we can give the time to God and His Word and how we live our life. The biblical principles on money and stewardship help us keep money in its proper place. And so again, we have a choice. Am I going to let money be my master? Or am I going to let God be my master? And I'm going to manage my money according. The possessions that He's blessed me with, I'm going to manage those according to what He teaches in His Word. Again, this is not something that we as shepherds want from you. We're not teaching this because we want more of your money for the church. We're teaching this because we want you to be a better steward in all aspects of money in your life. And yes, part of that, as I mentioned at the beginning, is to be generous because God is a giver. He's given us so much. And He calls us to give to Him as we've been prospered. But also notice with that passage that the first step in stewardship is to be a follower of Jesus. To give Jesus, to give God my life by becoming a Christian. We're here to help you. If you need help with any of those things, you're welcome to come while we stand and sing. My Lord.